Hello everyone, welcome to the May outing of Women in Food and Farming. As you come in, could you turn off your audio and your video, please? If you've been on any of the four or five or six of these before, you know how fantastically chaotic they are at the beginning. So we're just going to let everyone come on. I think everyone's good. Everyone's nearly got this. Hannah, could you turn off your video for us, please? She's just desperately, Hannah's just desperately trying to find her video. She's got it. Well done. And everyone else is piling in. Christine, you got a fantastic background there as I chip over my audio. Christine, are you going to reveal to all that you're not in your, we love your home office, your home studio, because you normally talk us through all your pictures, but you don't seem to be in your home office today. Where are you? Please.
I'm in a marquee in a pub in a place called Willington in Derbyshire. We are the only people.
Excellent.
Can you not hear me?
Yeah, you just went a bit shaky on the internet. So just
okay.
Shall we have another go? You're back with us. Just tell us where you are again, please.
I am in a pub in Willington in Derbyshire, and I'm on a chair making course in a wood. And I managed to get away on time. And actually, my beer has just arrived as well.
One of the most professional women I know in agriculture and fresh produce, Christine Taken. And can we just say a quick hello to your husband? Because he was the chef. We've got to bring him in.
They want to say hello to you as well.
Hello. Fantastic. Hello, Mr. T.
He's just choosing the food. He can't hear you because I've put you on my earphones.
Excellent. So of the 70 or 80 or 150 people dialed in, Mr. Taken is kindly ordering food for us all. So that's scampi and chips 150 times and a gin and tonic all round. Hello, Beverly, you're in. Beverly, could you turn off your video? Beverly's definitely trying to find. Emily's in. Emily's turned off her video. Beverly can't find the control she has. Right, let's get on with this. Oh, we're going to do this. So we got a fantastic outing today, Christine. Christine is like the one show. She's out of studio, and we're going to see how this runs. So let's do the professional rah-rah. Women in Food and Farming is a group of professional women in food, agriculture, and the land-based industries at all stages of their careers who get together to discuss business issues, support each other via mentorship and advice, and help generate networks of contacts that might be useful to themselves and their businesses. Founded in 2011 by Christine CBE, the group started back in 2011, I said that, with just five women, and now has over 500 members. Christine is known as the first grocery code adjudicator, and previous to that was head of the co-op's farming business, and she's been recently appointed chair of the Assured Food Standards, which operates the Red Tractor Assurance Scheme, amongst others. So in our current strange times, we, Beanstalk, are very proud to host this monthly broadcast so that all of you can still connect, so that you can keep the momentum of the group going. And just on that point, you must join Women in Food and Farming. And to do that, if you dial up Claire Smith on LinkedIn and look at Claire's profile, or go to her company's website that she's one of the great team of, More People. And if you just go onto Google and type in Women in Food and Farming, More People, or Claire Smith, that will take you to their landing page where you can register for free. So Christine, what was your thought this month about our guest speaker before we introduce her? Why did you want to go down this particular route?
Well, to be absolutely honest, Karen has been a member of Women in Food and Farming for ages. She's been on virtually every one of these monthly talks, and she contacted me as a fellow liveryman. We're both liverymen of the Worshipful Company of Farmers, and said, why don't I give a talk about the livery company? And it's probably something that a lot of people don't know about. And Karen is actually the next master, which is the top head honcho. And there's a lot of ceremony and everything behind it, but it does run training courses. And I thought that and some other activities they do, I don't want to reveal all, would be of a lot of interest to people. And anybody can join the livery company. You know, you have to be proposed and seconded, but there may well be people on the call who might be interested in the company and all its good works.
And what we're going to do, we're going to have a conversation with Karen Mercer in a moment. And after that, we're going to play three videos by three individuals. And actually, Christine, I don't know if you managed to have a look at them when they came in from the three ladies. They're hugely inspiring as to what they have done with Karen and her team. Karen, let's get you in. So as Karen's coming in, I'm just going to give a bit of a brief background. So Karen Mercer, speaking to us about the very well-respected Worshipful Company of Farmers Organisation. Karen's been involved in the agricultural sector all of her life, holding various positions, including directorship of Mercer Farming and regional chairman of Coutts Bank Landowners Client Group. And in respect to the Worshipful Company of Farmers, she's a liveryman, court assistant and chairman of their educational committee. Karen, hello.
Hello there, Max. How are you?
We're very, very well. So how do you know Christine? Christine, how do you know Karen?
Oh, I think...
You go. You go, Christine.
I was going to say, I think we certainly know each other through the Worshipful Company. I've actually been involved in your business. And I've also met your sons, and I was interviewing one of them recently for associateship of the Fellows of the Royal Agricultural Societies. So I actually feel I know quite a lot of your family.
That's right. And also, when I was hosting a lunch for Ladies in Agriculture with Coutts Bank, you were one of my guests that time. It was rather special. I had 40 ladies in agriculture at the bank.
Wow.
It was good, wasn't it?
Excellent. Yeah.
Fantastic. So, team, let's get on with this. Christine, if you could just turn off your video and drink your gin quietly, please, and eat your scampi and chips quietly. And so just to reiterate, so Karen and I, we're going to have a conversation for about 15, 20 minutes, and then we're going to play these videos from three very inspiring ladies. We're then going to have a short Q&A, and then we're going to stop the live feed, but all of those that are dialed in, we're going to go into the breakout rooms so that we can all catch up with each other. Karen, is that okay? Does that sound like
absolutely
a plan?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, and we've already pre-warned Karen, but she knows this already, that this broadcast is completely chaotic with lots of people dialing in. And like Christine, Christine's now turned her video off because she was about to show us her scampi and chips. So Karen, the Liverymen's Association, I suppose I'm not a member, but my main connection with it is the City Food Lecture. And I think it's a fantastic advert for all of the societies at the Guildhall in February in normal times to see how your organisations, the collective organisations, work. But can you tell us a little bit more how the movement started, please?
Well, yes, I'll try and do it as quickly as I can because there's so much to tell you. So let's go back 1800 years, and when the Romans came and they used to build walls around where they lived and they traded. And these became known as the city walls. And the city wall in London marks our square mile, and some of the original wall is still standing. So you had where the city wall is and people traded in there. And as the centuries went on, there were people selling milk, bread, cloth. And if you wander through the city, you'll see Milk Street, Bread Street, Mason's Avenue, all relating to these different trades. And the trades then started to belong to guilds so that they could have some rules and regulations. And that was to protect not just the traders, but their customers and also their employees. And that's where you get the expression, the baker's dozen, so that they never undersold. And then as it went on, the liveries, these guilds became liveries. And they were called liveries because they used to wear traditional fine clothing, quite like the big household. So sort of think Downton Abbey and the livery people. They wore these gowns, the more senior members. And the livery companies became wealthy and were very powerful and prestigious within the city and helped the City of London grow. And we get to the very, very first livery company was the Weavers in 1130. And then by 1693, there were 77 livery companies. And most people have heard of the Great 12. That was the Lord Mayor in 1515 who decided on these Great 12 livery companies. And these still remain today. So in order, they are the Mercers, of which I have nothing to do with, apart from the name, the Grocers, Drapers, Fishmongers, Goldsmiths, Skinners, Merchant Tailors, Haberdashers, Salters, Ironmongers, Vintners, and the Cloth Workers. So these are known as the Great 12. Now, you've all heard the expression sixes and sevens. Well, that comes from the Great 12, because there was a dispute between the Skinners and the Merchant Taylors. Each thought that they should have place number six. So it was agreed that every even year, the Skinners would be at number six. Fantastic. And every odd year, the Merchant Taylors would be at number okay. six. So that's why we all say we're at sixes and sevens now. But just what I want you to remember is that the original city walls that the Romans built is now what we call the square mile. Wow. And you'll have heard about the square mile. We've all grown up knowing about the square mile, but that's yep. where it started from. And that's just a little bit of the ancient history.
And Karen, there's 12. Is there much communication between the 12? Is there much interaction, or are you fairly solo on your on an independent basis?
No, there's a lot of interaction. So when you go through to be master, you represent your livery company and you work very closely with all of the livery companies. And you mentioned the event that we have in February at the Guild Hall. The City Food Lecture. Sure. So that's seven of the livery companies get together on that. And lots of livery companies work together under the Lord Mayor. So the Lord Mayor heads it all up, and then we all work together with him and support his different charities.
And I'm going slightly off message here, but are the organisations, are they quite quiet? Or are you quite out there? Do you look to promote yourself quite heavily, or are you looking to be quiet organisations?
No, we're not quiet organisations. We are promoting ourselves, and we do an awful lot of good. And actually, the farmers have now got a PR company that we work with to try and promote what we do. So we don't want to be under the radar. We want to get out there and shout about what we do, because we do an awful lot of good.
Thank you. Why are the farmers a modern livery company? When farming comes, why are the farmers a modern livery company when farming goes back to the beginning of time? Why are you modern?
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, we're one of the oldest professions, and yet we're not a livery company, but all our goods have always been sold. So farmers worked in the countryside, and other trades sold our goods into the city. So cornmongers being the oldest, and then you have the distillers, the brewers, the bakers, the butchers. So all of these other people sold our goods in the city. We just sent them into the city. And then it all changed with World War II, and we had German U-boats blocking the ports. And so all the grassland, thousands and thousands of acres of our grassland, had to be ploughed so that we could feed the nation. So we were supporting the war effort. And then there was the National Red Cross appeal that went throughout the United Kingdom, and that raised 57 million. But the Agricultural Fund, under the banner of the Red Cross, there were 18,000 committees through England and Wales, and that raised £8.5 million. And that today, in today's money, would be £335 million raised by the Agricultural Fund for the war effort. So farmers, if they wanted to give a contribution towards it, if they were selling calves at the market and they wanted some of their calves to go to the Red Cross appeal, there would be a Red Cross on the calves. And that meant that the buyer knew that whatever they gave for that calf would be going to the Agricultural Fund. So we raised all this money, and it was presented in 1946. And King George, he helped... In the Windsor Great Park, nine oaks were planted in a cross as a permanent memorial yeah. to what the agricultural community had done for the war effort. And there's a plaque there that says, "Through God's good grace, through strength of English oak, we have preserved our faith, our throne, our land. Now with our freedom saved from tyrant's yoke, we plant these trees, remember why they stand." And on that day, with King George there was the Queen and the Princesses Elizabeth and Margaret. And those trees are still standing. In fact, I was just sent a photograph the other day of the nine trees and the plaque that is there. So the agricultural community were then recognised for what they'd done in the war effort.
Wow.
And then it goes on. So we've got all the farmers were working together, and they'd set up this agricultural fund committee. And then when all this, the Red Cross appeal ended, they wanted to keep the communication going throughout the country. So they set up in 1947 something called the Farmers Company, and it was suggested that they should apply for livery status. And we kept applying to the Guildhall, and there were all was just many obstacles, and it didn't happen. So this is really rather a nice story. So in 1951, King George was in Windsor Great Park, and one of his tenants was a liveryman, and he inquired how we were getting on with our application to become a livery. And he was told, not very well, we keep applying to the Guildhall, but there's always obstacles. So King George said, well, I'm meeting with the Lord Mayor next week. I'll have a word.
Fantastic.
So the story goes that they're at a banquet, and King George turned to the Lord Mayor and said, I understand the farmers have applied for livery status. It would please me greatly if this would come about in your year of office. So that was in 1951, and in June 1952, we got our livery status. Sadly, King George died in February, so he didn't know that it had been achieved, but he did get the wheels in motion. And then in 1955, our Queen gave us our Royal Charter. And then we've gone on from there, and we've got our own hall, which is at 3 Cloth Street, which we share with the Fletchers, who are arrow smith makers. Obviously, they don't make arrows anymore, but they do support a lot of disabled people, and they take part in the different games. And in 1978, heavens above, 3 ladies were finally admitted to the livery company. Nice. And the first one to be admitted was somebody called Mrs. Wheatley Hubbard, who was a farmer from Warwickshire, and she bred Tamworth pigs, and was very, very well known in her own right, and she became our very first Lady Master in 1993. So at the moment, we've got 400 members. Most of them are involved with farming and food production, or very strongly aligned with other agribusinesses. So at the moment, ladies, we've only got 39 lady members, and there are 400. So I do think we could do with some more support from our very able ladies who are here today. So if anybody would like to find out more, I'd be delighted to tell you.
So Karen, that's a bit of a housing call, that you would like more ladies to join with you.
Oh, I've got so much talent out there. Come on, yes.
Tell me about it.
Lots of talent.
And just go back a bit. I love this. I didn't know that about the whole connotation of the Second World War, and with the element with the 9 oak trees. That's quite emotional, having got a slight military history with my family being involved, and the fact that there was that farming. I just wish that was slightly more promoted, and the fact that you got a PR company on board is great. And you just, I'm not going to go for this connotation. You look at what's happened over the last year and how well farmers and growers have done in the UK to feed the nation without its trials and tribulations. If there's one thing that always comes through, Karen, it's agriculture, isn't it? It's farming always comes through.
Yeah, and we just get on and do the job. Farmers just always just get on with it and produce what's needed. Yeah. And yes, and it should be, well, more sung a bit. You know, let's sing it from the rooftops. Don't let's complain about things. Just let's get on and do it, and let's see for people what we do. Let's show by example.
Well said. And how many livery companies are there today?
Right. Well, in 1693, there were 77. Then there weren't any more for another 233 years. And then the Master Mariners came in 1926, and we came in 1952. And at the moment, there are 110, the last ones being the Art Scholars, and there are 3 or 4 waiting for livery status at the moment. And we're very lucky because there's 42 that have their own hall, and we're very lucky because we share ours with the Fletchers at 3 Cloth Street. But just a little interesting, these livery companies, you know, we give £70 million per year to various charities, mainly education. And a big initiative that's been run by the Draper's Company this time is the Kitchen Livery Initiative, where they've been involved with getting meals to the NH staff and local communities.
Wow, that's
fantastic. And the Hackney Carriage Livery Company, during the pandemic, they have been taking first line workers to work in their taxis, so they haven't got to go on public transport. So yeah, we do an awful lot in the city, which people don't realise. But £70 million per year to various charities is quite a figure.
Wow. I was, when I was doing my initial prep for this broadcast, one of my questions was going to be, are the liverymen fit for purpose? But crikey, you've just blown me out of the water on that perspective, Karen, because they are with those examples that you gave. So today, what's the purpose of the farmer's livery? What does it achieve? What is it looking to achieve in the future?
Well, our main thing is obviously fellowship with fellow liverymen who are all interested in our wonderful industry, because, you know, you've got to have that social interaction and want to be there to do more. But our strap line is inspiring, encouraging and developing excellence in the management and leadership of UK agriculture.
Wow.
And on the charitable side, we support agricultural charities and the Lord Mayor in the city. So, yes, it's our training courses, really, the management and leadership in agriculture. And we've got two flagship courses that you may know about. There's the Advanced Course of Agricultural Business Management, which is in its 70th year, and the Challenge of Rural Leadership, which is in its 25th year. And I do know later that you have got three people speaking on a video that have all attended the Challenge of Rural Leadership. But it's just stunning what they do. You don't get a prospectus before you start these courses. You just told you should go along, do these courses, and it'll all be so worthwhile. And they don't give too much away, but they're just amazing. And each year, at the end of each course is reviewed. We look what is relevant, what we should be changing. So it is always evolving all the time to make sure our courses are delivering what the industry needs. So I can't encourage you enough to just have a look for both your personal and business development. And, you know, wherever you are on your career path and your own personal development, that varies at the age that you might do it. But, you know, there is always a right time for everyone to get on and improve themselves and do one of the courses. So on that, there's a group of people got together, and week beginning Monday the 17th of May, we're promoting what's known as Leadership Week. And there's going to be a lot of PR telling people about the leadership courses that are available and that where they should be looking and what their next step in their career could be, and to encourage people to look to see where they're at and how they can develop themselves. We've all got so much to learn, and you never stop learning.
Yeah, okay, Karen, just on that side, Christine and I, we're going to be using the Beanstalk platform to promote that week. So we haven't got the marketing set up, but we're very excited on that. And Karen, isn't it brilliant that the sector such as this is looking to positively encourage people to further develop themselves? This is one thing I've definitely learned off this broadcast series with Women in Food and Farming, is the having a mentor. And as we keep on finding that the better people have always had a mentor through their career. It might not have been the same person, but just to have that person who can guide them and steer them on a career and an emotional, sometimes a personal basis. It's a great thing to have. The more training development that people can put into themselves, the better that they're going to be. And the fact that there's all of these organizations coming together, including yourself, to set that up is hugely exciting. I suppose in some ways, Karen, it's a shame it's never been done before, but it's great that it's been set up now.
It's never too late to go and do something, and it's all happening now, and we're all very excited about it. And just watch for Monday the 17th, and you'll get it coming at you from every quarter as we try and we tell you about it.
But I
did a course myself 3 years ago, and I did the Windsor Leadership course, and it does take you out of your comfort zone. And I went along to Windsor Castle, which is where we were. And I was the eldest by 20 years. And we've got the army there, the Air Force, senior people from government. And all my badge said was Karen Mercer Hill Farm. And I thought, oh, I'm going to sit under the radar here and just get through this. But there's no getting under the radar. You're out there, and you really have to put yourself out there and get on with it. And it's great. Every opportunity you could take, you should to try and develop and do things.
And Karen's probably a bit of a specific question, but the likes of the MDS, the great MDS, and Kirsty's running the dials behind the scenes for us today. They outsource some of the the training element to a fantastic training provider. With the courses that people can do with yourselves, is the training all done internally, or do you have external training companies, consultants to help you?
Right, what we do with our two courses, the Challenge Abroad Leadership is run by the Dutchy College, and they go down to Dartington Hall and have 2 weeks there, residential. And the advanced course, the Challenge Abroad Leadership is by Richard Soap, he's the director. And the advanced course, the director is Keith, and that's run at the RAU. So we outsource it. And then we're also involved with the Cranfield, and we support people there to do either an MBA or an executive MBA or a business growth program. I find the business growth program absolutely staggering. It's an 11-week course, and you attend Cranfield for about 4 weekends during that time, and you're with a group of about 5, but they're not from agriculture, they're from other businesses, and you dissect your business and you put it back together again, and you really do look at your business. And because it doesn't matter what business you're in, you've all got to make a profit, and a lot of the fundamental things are all the same. It doesn't matter, and it does you good to look at other businesses, not just agriculture. So the business growth program is a great one to do, and all these courses, they're just relevant for different times of your career. So you might start on one and then go and do another one. There's the Nuffield, there's the Institute of Agricultural Management, there's the Windsor. It goes on and on. It's all there. But back to the library, we do those three. We do our courses, and now we have an alumni association for everybody who's been on our courses. And now we have an annual conference at Cranfield each year. So that's great. We've got people who have been on our courses, 40 years ago that are coming to that. So that's great. We support in the field. We do young farmers. We do training awards and send 2 senior young farmers to the Oxford Farming Conference. We do college prizes. And a really great one we've got at the moment is somebody called Chloe Dunn. And she was a previous Young Farmers Award winner. And now she's going on and she's doing a research paper in women in agriculture that we're supporting her through. So I was Chloe's mentor a few years ago, so I just get such a buzz from Chloe and everything that she's doing. We do research papers, and one that's particularly important and goes on from strength to strength each year is the health and well-being within the agricultural industry. And now there's a forum held, lots of forums are held a couple of times a year to try and address this problem, because it's huge, health and well-being within the agricultural industry. People who are struggling need a support system to try them help them out in the difficult times. So that's all our serious stuff. We have great social events, and we're with people with a common interest, and we also have relevant and inspiring speakers. But you know, it's not all that. We've got the pancake race. So I did the pancake race last year. I thought I'll be fine with this. So off I went with my frying pan. I lost my hat. I didn't catch my pancake, and I came in last. But you know, that was all good fun. On another thing we do is we take sheep over London Bridge every year. So lots of different fun things going on. But our big charity that we're very involved with is Surrey Docks Farm, which is a working farm community on the bank of the River Thames. And Gemma's speaking to you soon. But that's just fascinating what that does. And one of our initiatives for next year is we're doing what's called the City Farm Movement, and we're trying to get support and funding for the city farms so they continue to play a more important part in the urban community. The city farms are all charities. There's 13 that are free entry, and they can just need so much more money, so they can do so much more. So they sort of tick so many boxes, these city farms, you know, educational, bringing farming to the urban community. They have volunteers of people who are unemployed or perhaps got learning difficulties. Everybody's welcomed. And, you know, these farms have so much to offer. So we're kicking off in October, and the Lady Mayoress, who I believe is present this evening, she's very kindly hosting us at the Mansion House. So we're having a nice lunch and hopefully getting some serious supporters there with hopefully some deep pockets to kickstart our initiative. And then we're going right the way through. And in June, we're ending up with a big presentation at 3 Cloth Street, where the 13 city farms are going to do a coordinated presentation showing all the different aspects of the city farms and what they bring to the urban community. So we're just I'm just thrilled to be involved with that next year. So that's going to be my big charitable project next year. Fantastic. But we're working hard at it now, and hopefully that'll be bring lots and lots of awareness to the city farms and much needed funds. So that's what we're hoping to do.
Karen, well done. And we just had a comment in from Deborah Crossan, who said, the leadership course is quite incredible and I took part in 2020. Go for it, she says. Isn't that lovely? That's fantastic. And just to say, I did the BGP Business Growth Programme some 10 years ago at Cranfield. And as he said, it is an amazing course. You meet some incredible individuals, and it is not stuffy or formal. It is very, very relaxed, but very strategic and very forward thinking, and a great place for it to be hosted at Cranfield. So just from my perspective, it helped me create the businesses that we have now. So Karen, what is your role and the plans going forward? What do you want to achieve with this?
Right, well, at the moment I'm what's known as senior warden. So I became a liveryman in 2009. And by 2010, I think I found myself on my first committee. So I've been on committees all the way through. Then I went and chaired the awards committee. And then I went on to chair the education for 3 years. And now I'm just senior warden. So I've had my year at home. So I have no excuse for not making sure I'm up and running come the 12th of October when I become installed as master. The theme, my theme for the year is the future of the family farm. I come back on both sides of my family. I go back, farming is in my blood. I go back generations. All my grandparents and great grandparents were farming. So it's very close to my heart. And I've got three sons. Two are very involved with the family business, but one is still a director. So I kick off my year and it's the Lord Mayor's show. Yeah. Now, the Lord Mayor's show, another little story. The Lord Mayor's show started with King John in 1215. When the Lord Mayor had to go and pledge his allegiance to the King. So when he became Lord Mayor, he got on the River Thames and went up to Westminster to pledge his allegiance to King John. But now tradition has gone on since then, and we have the Lord Mayor's show. So this year, I want to highlight the dairy industry, and I have great support from the NFU, Red Tractor. Thank you, Christine. And New Holland. So I've got a methane tractor pulling my trailer. So a little envisage this. At the front of it, I've got dairy products. Then I've got some fiberglass calves. And then I've got two cows, fiberglass again, with a cluster on the udder, and then milk going to a jar. And then the NFU have got a skirt around the trailer telling them all about the dairy industry, the environment, what we're doing. And they've got a fantastic calf, this big calf to sit on the tractor as well. So that's quite exciting. And then I'm doing a report. My report this year is how the family farm can engage and adapt to the new agriculture. There's a banquet at Draper's Hall in the January. And then I have an agricultural lecture in April, and I'm addressing the elephant in the room, or shall I say, in the farmyard, which is succession. So I have Professor Pat Lobley and somebody called James Small, a farmer, to discuss succession and how they've been tackling it. And then there's question answers. And then I have my nephew, who's just become an MP, called Keithley and Ilkley. Wow. And he's going to entertain us at the House of Lords. We're going to have a look around the House of Lords and then a question and answer session there. And then it's getting towards the end of my year then, and it'll be a summer visit to Staffordshire, which my sons will be hosting with me. And I've got lots of fun things planned for that. So I want it to be interesting, informative, but fun and a bit of a party atmosphere. So with that and the City Farm Movement Initiative, I should be quite busy. But generally, when you're master, you have about 130 engagements through the year. With the farmers' company, the city, and the other livery companies. So it's a busy year. So I've just been, I'll be expanding my wardrobe, I'm sure. So it'll be good fun. And I'm looking forward to representing the farmers' company. It's a fabulous opportunity, and I'm just looking forward to every moment. Okay, so that's a quick run through. So thank you very much indeed. But if anybody would like to find out more about becoming a liveryman, please get in touch, because it would be great to have some of you wonderful ladies with us. So thank you.
Karen, that was fantastic. I've just been trying to hold on to you all the way through on the pictorial history that you've given on the organisation and also on yourself. But let's finish with a real rah-rah about what you want to achieve for the organisation. Can you just highlight again, especially for the people on the podcast, what the courses are, what they can do, and then Kirsty's going to then run the videos. But if you could just give us a bit of a précis as to why people should deploy your courses for themselves, that'd be fantastic, please.
You know, I'm absolutely staggered that more people don't do the courses. You know, so many people go back to the family farm and start working, and I'm just staggered that they don't then go and learn more. And how many businesses take on somebody who hasn't furthered their education and give them a business to run? You know, I just think that we can just offer them so more, a different perspective. And you go on to these courses and you're two, three weeks with 18 other people on the course, and they become your sounding board throughout the rest of your life, really. My ex-husband, he did a course. He still meets everybody. They all meet everybody once a year. They have a reunion. And we try to keep everything on the course relevant and exciting and inspire them to get on and do things and take their business forward and themselves forward. It's personal and business development. And I just... I get quite frustrated when people say, oh, well, we're all right, we're doing okay. Well, you can do a damn sight better. Get out there, get yourself out of your comfort zone and come on and do the industry and yourself a power of good. So, yeah, I just wish people would do it more. And I think quite of them are frightened to put themselves out there. You know, they've gone home and it can get comfortable. You've been to university and there are lots of other pressures, you know, they've got families, etc. But it's so worth it. It's just so worth it.
Karen, well done. In my travels, I remember being with an amazing family in Morocco, and they were big grape growers. And on the kitchen wall, as you walked out, they got this big logo motto up there saying, "Life begins at the end of your comfort zone." When I was at Harper Adams, one of the best students there, far better than me, he stated that he was only at Harper for the 3-4 years because he had to go back to the family farm, and he saw it as a bit of a life sentence. And we told our tutor, and the tutor took him aside and spent literally half a day with him, just explaining that he wasn't in a life sentence, that this was the beginning, not the end. And I can happily say that 25, 30 years on, he's now the CEO of a major agricultural business just because he got that push. Karen, we need people like you to give us all that push and to engage with you and to do the course. Shall we hear, Karen, on these amazing three women and on the results of their course so that you can hear it firsthand, so that we can all hear it firsthand? Shall we hear it, Karen?
Lovely. Yes, please.
Kirsty, can we roll? And Karen, can you just turn off your video?
Alison Peer. I'm from the Isle of Man, and in 2015 I took the challenge of rural leadership. I'll be honest with you, I'd put it off from the year before. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, and I definitely didn't see myself as a leader in any form. I'm a farmer's wife, I have a marketing agency, I do a lot of social media training. But a leader, am I a leader? I don't know, it didn't resonate with me at all. The course is probably the best thing from an educational point of view that I have done. It gave me a group of 16 very close friends and people who I now rely on. If I have any questions, if I need a conversation with somebody, industry specific, we meet up once a year. The interesting thing about the course is you're not going to find an itinerary of you do this on, you know, 10 o'clock day one, 2 o'clock. Before you go, you know nothing about it, and I think that's the thing that you just have to accept, and that's how it should be. You have to roll with it. You have to go with the unexpected, and you have to make the most of it. Don't think that you can work while you're doing it, because you can't. You have to immerse yourself in the experience for 2 weeks. But it has made me into somebody who I actually think I possibly am now able to lead. Now, that's 4, 5, 6 years on. I think about the course. Honestly, I think about things I've learned in the course probably every single day I use it. And it's enabled me to grow, develop, learn, take on more and more ambitious roles. And even at home, on the farm here, it has given me more confidence in what we do and why we do it. I absolutely recommend it, and I'm so looking forward to chatting to you guys today.
Hi, my name's Gemma. I'm the manager of Surrey Docks Farm in central London. This is a 2-acre city farm that aims to educate and engage local people to learn about farming, food production and the natural environment. We're a working farm and we rear livestock for meat, eggs, and we also grow lots of fruit and vegetables which we harvest and sell to the local community. We aim to engage those who would benefit most. So we have a youth program for those more vulnerable. We also work with young offenders. We link with local primary schools and as well as older people's groups and care homes. We run a training project that engages adults with learning disabilities to learn about animal care, grow their own food and also cook with it here in our small kitchen. We've been lucky to be supported by the Worshipful Company of Farmers and build a relationship with them for many years. So they've helped us with capital projects, replacing cow barns and investing in our muck heap, which is always a challenge here in London. They've also helped with connections and helped us establish a livestock apprenticeship programme, supporting young people into the agriculture industry. More recently, they helped me get onto the CRL course and encouraged me to do that. I attended in 2019 and found it hugely beneficial and would really encourage others to find out more and apply. I think it was particularly beneficial having been on that when the pandemic hit. It really teaches you to embrace change and be ready to adapt, and that was something that was critical in the past year. So I'm pleased to say the farm is still here, still going strong, and we're welcoming all of our community members back now, which is wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, so I've been asked to give a 1 minute thought on why I did the Challenge of Rural Leadership course from the Worshipful Company of Farmers back in 2014. And to be completely honest, the way that the course is pitched is that it appeals particularly to people who are in a bit of a dilemma. So if you're a bit of a crossroads in your career or in your personal life or whatever it might be, the course is really there to kind of, you know, take you out of your comfort zone, use the metaphor of getting above your problems, so on the balcony rather than in the dance floor, so you begin to get some perspective on the stuff that's going on around you. That was certainly very true for me at that time of my life. It was a really difficult time. Came back from the course having made the most amazing set of friends, confidants, business contacts who I still regularly message and communicate with, and on a much deeper level than you may expect from other management or educational type experiences. Made the most amazing and dramatic changes to my life, which have brought me to the stage where I am now. So I have the CRL course for the Worshipful Company of Farmers to thank for really picking me up, giving me a good shakedown, and enabling me to find that path forwards into something which continues to delight and surprise me. So for anybody who is thinking about whether that kind of intervention, whether just getting outside of the problems that you've got around you at the moment might be beneficial, I would say absolutely do it. 100%. Thank you.
Wow. Can we have in Karen? Can you come back in, please? Can we have Debbie? Can we have Kirsty? Can we have Alison? Can we have Gemma? Can we have Christine? And can we have Emily if you're all there? Karen, what did you think to that?
I'm just blown away by all of them. Do you know, on our courses, we've had about 1,800 people through in all the courses. And I think every single one would say, how it's benefited them and their business. And look what they've all gone on to do. I just think it's amazing. And, you know, we have to, on occasion, have people leaving one of the courses, and on the Monday they've handed in their notice and they're setting up on a new path. Wow. You know, it really does make everybody stop and consider what they're doing and where they want to go. But they're all inspirational, all of them. I'm so very proud to be associated with it all.
Well done, Karen. So I'm just going to run around them quickly. And Alison, what did you think about the other comments that Gemma and Emily made?
I think I completely agree. It is a real life-changing thing. I refer to it so much, and I really try and encourage other people to put themselves forward for it as well. Yeah, it's just the best thing probably that I've done, and I wasn't going to do it. So yeah, I can't impress on people enough. But I do think that. You know, who knows that they're a leader? Who that's was the big question that I had to ask myself. I'm no leader. Who do I lead? I don't lead anybody, you know. And I think people that for that element, it's very hard for people to think, well, why would I go on it? Why am I going to challenge myself? Why will I ever be a leader? And that I think in the messaging is something that needs to be worked on more. If they want more people on it, to understand what being a leader actually is and how that will move you forward. I think that would really help.
Fantastic. And Alison, is it okay if people want to get a bit of an inside view to if they could contact you direct?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. If you don't know, the interesting thing is you don't know what's going to happen when you get there. And that is really bizarre. So you have no expectations. Wow. But that is how it needs to be, because if it was all formulaic, if you would like day one, this day two, this, you wouldn't have the same experience. So you can't really describe to people what happens or how it's going to roll out for you. But I'm absolutely happy for anybody to get in touch. And if you're in any doubt or you wonder how it's helped me in the past 6 years since then, feel free to get in touch.
Gemma, Alison, you're fantastic. Gemma, well, I'm still convinced you're in Portugal, not in London, because your light levels are so good. Would you endorse everything that Alison's just said?
Yeah, absolutely. I've obviously been on the course a bit more recently, but I still find myself reflecting on various things. And I think you come away from the course with all these kind of ideas, and actually you keep going back and picking other things up and reflecting from it. And also Alison mentioned about the peers that are on the course with you, and I think that's really valuable. Sadly, I'm not abroad, I am in London. but you know, for me, I felt like I'm probably gonna be a bit of an outsider. I'm coming from a slightly different background, coming from a city farm, coming from London, when it's the challenge of rural leadership and others weren't. But actually, really quickly, the way the course is run, we're all, you know, become like really close friends and are supporting each other. And there's this network that you have going on, so that, you know, once you've completed the course, you've still got that support and you still have that regular contact, which I think is really valuable as well.
Yeah, Gemma, just give us a big shout out for your organisation. What's the website, please?
Brilliant, thank you. So it's www.surreydocsfarm.org.uk. And we're also pretty active on all the social media sites, so at Surrey Docs Farm. And as Karen mentioned, it's not just us. Obviously, I'm a bit biased, but there are 13 other city farms in London and also across the UK doing really amazing work and raising the profile of farming in the city. So we did have to close our doors for a bit, but we had lots of visitors coming in this afternoon, and just having that real and seeing how food's produced and getting people kind of outside is really, really valuable. So yeah, look us up and again, get in touch if you'd like to find out more.
Fantastic. If okay, at some point, Karen and Christine, I haven't asked them this, we're going to come down and film you with me, if that's okay. So we'll just take that as a given, and hopefully the ladies will be fine with that. Emily, can I just say thank you so much for being so honest and candid in your comments on your video. I think there's a lot of people, and Karen mentioned this about the sort of the dark times a lot of people going through at the moment, especially in farming. And for you to state that actually you're in a bit of a a bad, bad place, for want of a better expression, and that this course helped you, I think was brilliant, because we're actually talking about it. Have you got anything more to add, Emily, about the course and why people should do it, please?
The funny thing was, I remember Richard Soaf giving us a lecture towards the end, and he basically went, do not go home and change anything. Give it 6 months. And I literally walked through the door. It all kicked off, and that was it. Life got better. So I'm like, yes, completely ignore Richard Soaf, apart from all of the really sensible advice that he gives. So it's good. It's incredibly hard to explain the benefit of it until you're kind of there. I describe it now a bit like, it's like a buoyancy aid or a rubber ring. So no matter how kind of like chaotic life flowing past you feel, you know, you've got all this crap going on all the time. I know that the principles that we learn on that course and the friends that I made and the skills that we acquired is the stuff that kind of keeps me afloat. And even when it feels really, really tricky and you don't think you're going to get to the other side, you know that you can, because you've kind of got that self-belief and that training and that support that is the buoyancy aid that gets you there. And I can't advocate for it enough.
Emily, brilliant. Kirsty, everyone knows what you do, but for those that don't, just tell everyone what you do, because there's a direct link, I think, with this course. Kirsty, what do you do?
So I work with MDS, and we recruit and develop graduates who want to work within the food and fresh produce industry. And essentially, we control their lives for 2 years and say, well, anything that you wanted to do or thought you were going to, a certain career path, we're going to push you out of that comfort zone, put you in situations you'd never would have considered before, as well as training them to be the future leaders of the industry. So they definitely understand where some of the ladies are coming from who have spoken tonight about that fear factor of being pushed out of your comfort zone, but understanding where the benefits at the end of it.
And Kirsty, why I wanted you to do an advertorial for MDS is because training and development, the companies that invest in their teams see far better profitability and far better increased turnover. So we've got that example with MDS, and we've got this example with the course, as we've just seen with Emily, Gemma and Alison. So Kirsty, I'm probably words in your mouth. You'd endorse this course as well.
Yeah, I think the course sounded amazing, and definitely something I think some of our trainees would be interested in future sort of further down their career paths.
Yeah, because as Karen intimated, there's sometimes a right course, right time to do a course, and perhaps not a right time. And again, for the MDS individuals to be aware of doing the course, perhaps 10 years down the line. So Debbie, Christine, come on, are we going to do this course together? Are we going to phone up Karen and try and get an application form? Debbie, you go first.
Well, I on reflection, I think the opportunities people have got now are just wonderful, and let's encourage everybody to take as much opportunity and go for it as possible. Absolutely.
Well, Debbie, well done. Christine, can I just congratulate you? Because I was a bit sceptical about this being a session for the Women in Food Farming broadcast, but I've been completely blown away. I've been intellectually not murdered, but put back in my place by Alison, by Gemma, by Emily, and obviously by Karen, by the nature of this course. So I'm guessing you must be hugely impressed with this as well.
Yes, and I think the thing I wanted to say is that I've been involved in selection criteria for people going on to this course. I'm now a trustee of the Farmers Club Charitable Trust, and they fund people to go on the Worshipful Company of Farmers course, and they also fund educators to do various projects. They struggle, particularly getting on any of these courses, they struggle to get any women on the course. And I have frequently been asked to nominate people, and I can list all the people I've nominated that went to interview and just got straight through and got onto it.
Wow.
So I just wanted to say, you know, don't worry about the money. There are plenty of charities that will fund you if your business or you are unable to fund you to go on these courses. But if you apply and you're half decent, you'll get on, because they need more women on these courses. And it upsets me to think that there aren't, you know, we need more women in leadership, and you're not going to get there just by doing what you did yesterday. You've got to change, you've got to do things differently. And that's what all these courses, what MDS, everything else does, is it helps you develop and it trains you to be a leader.
Wow, Christine, thank you.
Max, can I just say, please, that on all our courses, we never want anyone not to be able to attend a course because of lack of funds. So we will always make sure that we can point them in the right direction, either to apply for money from other sources, and then delivery also offers a support system. We never, ever want anybody not to be able to attend a course that will benefit them because of not having sufficient funds. We make sure that these people are there. And if you want inspiration, if you look around all the agricultural leaders, all of them will have done something, some course or other. There's a whole realm of them out there, but they will all have done something. So if you want any inspiration, you don't have to look very far to get it. So I just encourage you all to look and come on, go and do something.
It's quite a common question that I ask people, particularly young entrepreneurs in the industry. And I say to them, what was the last piece of training you did? And I could bet £100 they would say health and safety. Because people think, I've done a health and safety course, I've done a first aid training course, I've been on training. This is nothing like going on leadership training. And everybody should do it. And I think even if you've just left university, start applying, get onto one, because you'll learn so much.
Karen, how do we find out about the course, please?
If you've got a pencil there, you can always go on our website, the Worshipful Company of Farmers. Anybody is very welcome to get in touch with me. So if you'd just like to write down my email address, I will always answer. So it's Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at kjmercer.co.uk. And I'd be delighted to hear from you. But just go on our website and then watch Leadership Week. It starts on the 17th of May and you'll hear all about leadership courses and what they can do for you.
Karen, go on, Christine.
I just wanted to say the Leadership Week I'm really impressed by, because all of the people that are involved in leadership, it started off with AHDB doing some research, but all of the organisations that are involved in leadership are all working together to promote the importance of leadership training. I think that's great. This first time ever.
Excellent. Everyone, as ever, we've overrun, so we're just going to go into the breakout rooms. Just to reiterate, all of the previous broadcasts for Women in Food and Farming are on the podcast series of Beanstalk. Just look at our website, beanstalk.global, or look at our website to look at the YouTube recordings. Christine, have we got the 98 scampi and chips inbound?
I had a chicken and ham pie, and I've had a pint of beer since I started as well. Oh, so I've done very well, thank you.
As long as you're okay.
But I just wanted to say, thanks to a bit of initiative amongst people on the team, we've got all our speakers lined up between June and October. So I can tell you that the June speaker is going to be Claire Keegan from Harper Adams, who's going to talk about degree apprenticeships and what's in it for the people doing them and what's in it for all of the employers. So that'll be quite interesting. That's the June talk. And we've got speakers. We've got Judith Batchelor from Sainsbury's. We've got a lady from India. We've got a wonderful lot all set up for you.
And we'll stick it on the Beanstalk website so everyone can see. And just to say, join Women in Food and Farming. Go to, just dial in more people, Women in Food and Farming. You hop over to Claire Smith's page on there and you can join up. And we're now going to go to the breakout rooms. Kirsty, thank you very much for saving us once again on the dials behind everything. Thank you, everyone. Stay with us and we'll go to the breakout rooms. Kirsty, if you could stop the live feed, that'd be brilliant.